Hey guys, before we get started today, I want to let you know that the college football final rankings will be announced this Sunday, along with bowl announcements for the teams that didn't make the playoffs. And ESPN's College Game Day podcast with Reese Davis and Pete Thamel, along with Always College Football with Greg McElroy, have you covered. Follow and listen where you're listening to this podcast. Welcome back to Munich Time Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks Elijah Moore should recreate his Egg Bowl celebration. Dogs everywhere loved it. I loved it. We're actually going to talk about Elijah Moore today. This is Munich Times. I am joined today by a first-time guest making his debut on the podcast. I just realized I forgot to double-check your pronunciation before we got started. I'm going to take a stab at it. Mike Tenier?
Absolutely correct. Phenomenal first time.
Yes. So Mike, for those who don't know, is a senior analyst at Football Outsiders. Of course, indispensable. We use it a lot on this show. You can also read his writing at the New York Times. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Tenier. One of my favorite follows. One of the smartest football writers around. Mike, not only is this your debut, I feel like you actually picked the best weekend of football of the season thus far.
I am so excited to be here on a weekend where there are really good games, like a variety of good games. I mean, last Sunday, I'm sitting in a Philadelphia area bar at 1 o'clock, and it's me and another guy, and we're looking around, and there's some soccer fans, and there's nobody else there. And we're like, well, what do we want on the dish? And it's like, well, I guess Titans-Bengals. Like that was the choice. That was the choice. And now we have a cornucopia coming in this week.
I actually did narrow it down to 6. And then I remembered Bills Pats was on Thursday. So I kind of put that at the end. We'll see how much time we have. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's just like wall to wall bangers. And then, of course, like a very underwhelming Sunday night game, which is kind of a bummer. But I don't even know where to begin. Usually I go, I almost wanted to start with Niners Dolphins because I feel like that is the, I don't know, cream of the crop this weekend. But I'm going to save that for a second. And we're going to get to that. And you have a piece in the New York Times on Tua and his success this year that I recommend people check out. I want to start with Jets Vikings, though, which of all these games, like I think we would have known, well, Chiefs Bengals, obviously, but Niners Dolphins, you know, I don't think we knew the Dolphins would be this good, of course, but it is the Mike McDaniel return. Jets Vikings, though, is one where I don't think anyone would have earmarked that as an important playoff ramification-y game ahead of the season. And then, of course, we certainly wouldn't have predicted that Mike White would be quarterbacking the Jets against the Vikings. Mike, I want to start there. Let's start with Mike. What did you make of his performance last weekend? And do you think, given how bad the Bears defense is, there's any carryover against Minnesota?
I think it was Quincy Avery on the internet, who's a great Twitter follower, who just summed it up saying, Mike White played quarterback like an adult. And I took about 1,000 words to say the same thing on Football Outsiders. It's like, this was not a phenomenal performance. If you box score, you know, scout it, you're like, oh, 3 touchdowns. It was phenomenal. It was not. But he was able to do all of the basic skills things you would ask from a quarterback. That's new for the Jets this year. They haven't had that really for the last couple of weeks. So I think it was solid enough. And you're right, that Bears defense, you know, it's depleted. There's not a lot left there. But I think he can replicate some of these things against the Vikings, where you're going to have opportunities with Garrett Wilson open. You're going to get opportunities with Moore and some of these other guys open. And if you can check down and play within yourself, which is all Mike White was doing, then you're going to be able to let your defense win a game against this Vikings team. My curiosity with White is how many weeks before he turns into a pumpkin. And I think last year it was like 1.5 before he went completely south. And I don't know. The way this Vikings season has been going, like, usually they'd be getting the bad quarterback right now. Like they would be getting like Zach Wilson right now, or Chris Streveler or something like that. So they're kind of getting Mike White where he's got his feet wet, but he hasn't been figured out yet. I don't think that's the best combination for the Vikings.
Yeah, you know, I think that your point about Mike White, like, when is he going to turn into a pumpkin? I'm looking at the Bills game next week because I actually think the Jets match up pretty well with the Vikings in terms of their offense versus the Vikings defense. You alluded to kind of Mike White, you know, playing within himself. One thing I thought was interesting, you know, so I didn't watch this game in real time. By the way, the amount of people who watch this game in real time, you all are sick watching the Bears Jets this weekend. But anyways, I digress. When I went back and watched it, you know, so I saw, you know, that he averaged, it was over 10 yards per attempt, and that was pointed out, you know. But then when you watch the game, it's like, oh, no, actually, it's, you know, significantly, I think, about half that, or maybe a little bit more than half that in air yards per attempt. But it was kind of like what you would expect out of a LaFleur, Mike LaFleur in this case, offense, which is throws over the middle of the field, getting yards after the catch. And I think that's a good formula against Minnesota, Mike, because this is a defense that has two very good pass rushers in Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter, but a lot of weakness behind them. And something I just pulled, because I was kind of looking for, okay, where the areas in which... So I've expressed frustration with the Vikings defense and how much off coverage they play, and you know, just how much soft zone and how much they let offenses work underneath. So they're really, really bad at defending play action, which, of course, is exactly what they want Mike to do, is just to take those easy play-action throws over the middle of the field. So unless the Smiths and Hunter go off, I think it's recreatable against this defense.
I think it is to a degree, and you're right. It's a rather static defense. It really relies on getting pass rush out of those bookend tackles, and there have been games, like I believe like on the Thursday nighter, those bookend tackles were not getting home in any way, and you saw the results for most of that game. They pulled it out again. I'm looking at it right now off of Football Outsiders and DVOA. You're talking about a defense that is 29th against number one receivers, 25th against number two receivers, 17th against third and fourth receivers. So you get the idea. It's very exploitable all across there. And one thing I see is in the middle of the field at linebacker and safety, they have a lot of experience. They definitely have a lot of experience. They don't have a lot of speed. You know, they have a lot of guys who I think 2 or 3 years ago you would say this guy can go out there and win isolated matchups. Now they're sitting in zones looking to try and prevent yak. I don't know if that's a great formula against the Jets.
Totally agree. Like Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore, who I mentioned at the top, they're going to get open. And what we saw last week was when they got open, Mike White got them the football. That was, you know, pretty much it. So I think it's just kind of, you know, as long as it comes down to pressure and then it comes down to him just not making any unforced errors trying to push the ball downfield. Right. So yeah, the Vikings defense is not as bad as the Bears defense, especially like the pressure element, I think, is the big differentiator, you know, because the Bears just can't pressure anyone right now. But they're also, they're not the strength of this team by any means. So I think that's part of the reason why I think this game is interesting. And on the other side of the football, you know, the Jets defense has been one of the fun stories of the season. They are very good. They're technically sound. They've got a great 4-man rush. My question for you is, do you think they can stop Justin Jefferson?
I don't know. I was looking at the statistics, Football Outsider statistics, for Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed, obviously having great seasons. Yeah. I believe, I don't have it up in front of me right now, the Jets are fourth in the NFL in DVOA at stopping number one receivers. So they've got an opportunity to do that. I know they keep their cornerbacks by sides. I'm pretty sure that Sauce is pretty much always on the left or mostly on the left, and Reed's on the right. So this creates opportunities for the Vikings to move things around. I don't know, because I've seen, for example, in the Eagles game, Justin Jefferson sort of get covered early in the game and disappear from the game plan, which I don't think is smart. Yes. I don't think that's how the Vikings should be playing. I think it'd be like, we have to force opportunities to this guy and not be like, oh, well, he's covered. Let's throw in the flat to Dalvin Cook. I don't think that's a recipe for success. If I'm the Vikings and if I'm Kirk Cousins and I'm coaching that team, I say, we're going to challenge Sauce. I mean, Sauce is a great rookie. He's still a rookie. You're Justin Jefferson. Challenge him. Try to force these opportunities, force some of these big plays, and I think that's the best matchup you're going to get against this Jets defense.
Yeah, I've said this a lot on this show, but I feel like there was a real turning point for Kirk Cousins, and I think it was the Commanders game where he was just like, F it. I'm just going to throw to him, you know? And I think if they could replay the Eagles game, they would approach it very differently, even despite how sticky the coverage was, because I have seen this dude double covered, bracket. It doesn't matter. The play on Thanksgiving where he split the double coverage. Yes. Like, yes. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And yes, they should absolutely go after Sauce. You know, the Jets are primarily a zone defense. I'll be curious to see defensively how Robert Saleh, that unit, approaches their coverage plan for him and how much they put on Sauce's plate. But for them, I think it really starts up front. You know, the Vikings offensive line and has been very beatable. And Kirk Cousins has struggled at various points under pressure. He's overcome that too, you know, this season. But I think with the Jets, with this defensive line playing as well as they have, with so many guys getting this pressure, both on the inside and outside, without blitzing, I think that's sort of the formula for them. It's not like the question, how do you stop Justin Jefferson? You bring Kirk Cousins down. That's how you do it.
You bring Kirk Cousins down, and they've got the guys to do it, Quinn and Williams. I don't have, right, by the way, a Christian Darrisaw health update. I don't know what his status is.
That's enormous.
Yeah. What's funny about the Vikings, though, this year is every weird little advantage that a team can get, they've got. And it doesn't always look like it's earned. For example, they have this huge penalty differential advantage. And I would initially look at them and say, well, you have a lot of veterans on your team, so maybe you're playing penalty-free football. Then I watched them against the Cowboys a couple weeks ago, and the moment things went south, they were trying to bite people's like ankles off and things like that. This is not a super disciplined team. That's one of their advantages. They have a big field position advantage, but when you look at their kicking game and return games, it's not that. It's just that like sometimes they get a pin, and a lot of times they get a touchback, and guys are bringing the ball 5 yards deep out of the end zone like the Commanders were doing and getting tackled at the 13-yard line. And they've got all these strange little advantages, and that's what they have to leverage to beat better teams, is all these little advantages. I don't know how sustainable that is for the Minnesota Vikings.
So I'm at, you know, I used to try to pull up the lines. I forgot to do it before this. Okay, without looking, what do you think the line is? If you already looked, don't answer that question.
I have not looked at the line, so I'm going to take a guess right now say...
It's in Minnesota.
Okay, so Vikings -4.5.
Vikings 3. Wow. But, you know, Vegas has not respected the Vikings all year. Wow, a pick him at home against Mike White.
Yeah.
That is...
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not what's being baked into here, but saying it is going to enrage Vikings fans. God, that is wild.
Football Outsiders DVOA does not respect the Vikings either, and they're the first team that comes out as below average with negative DVOA, being 9-2. In history. And so, you know, all these stats speak to you. And I think that Vegas, we always say Vegas, the house, looks at them and says, yeah, it's Justin Jefferson or bust against these better teams. And I think that's where you get a line like that.
I can't pick Mike White. We just did a whole back and forth about why we think this is a good matchup for New York, but it's freaking, I mean... God, this is a tricky one. It's a good game. It's a good game. I'm really struggling to pick against Justin Jefferson. Forget just quarterbacks. I'm like, Justin Jefferson to me, Mike, like has as much impact on a game as the quarterbacks do right now. Like, it's so unreal what this dude is doing.
Him and Tyreek.
Yeah,
and you know maybe Nick Bosa could call. There's nobody else in that category, but that's right. And I look at the other side, and you know I have an old handicapper's law that says when the new quarterback's making his first start, take him. You know, bet on him in his first start because the line will overreact in the other direction. He gets the custom game plan, and I've made a lot of money this year off of that. In the second start, run screaming in the other direction. Just run away from that because you don't.
Yeah.
You don't know going to get, and there could be a counter adjustment the other way. That would have me leaning Vikings. I will say one thing. I would consider a first quarter prop, just taking the first quarter. Vikings come out of the tunnel like gangbusters, particularly on offense.
Yes.
The first drive is usually pristine. So I don't know if I'm going to take a bet on this game. I might take the Vikings -1.5 in the first quarter and then just watch the rest of the game after that.
All right, let's get to Niners.
Okay.
The Niners Dolphins game, or Dolphins Niners rather. Okay, so I'm actually just going to tell you the line at the start of this one it's in San Francisco, and the Niners are favored by 4.5 some books. So, or 4.5 in some. Okay. So, it's very close. It's very close. First of all, before we get into even the football of it, have you been keeping up with the chippiness between these teams?
Not really, no.
Okay, so I might be I don't want to misrepresent this, so I'm just massive hedges everywhere. But Ty Dunn, who has this newsletter called Go Long, had a piece where he quoted, I'm pretty sure it was Raheem Mostert, just, you know, it wasn't that shady. It was a little, you know, just kind of like, you know, just talking about the Niners, his old team. And since then, and then Raheem Mostert was like, oh, left out all the positive quotes. You know, he might have suggested the quarterback, you know, whatever, wasn't as good. And so since then, the two teams have kind of gone, there's been players on both sides kind of just chirping a little bit, which is incredible because these teams are kind of like photo negatives of each other, the offenses rather, in such a fascinating way. It's such a great Styles Makes Fights game. They're similar, but they're not similar. Let's start with the Dolphins offense, because you just wrote a piece about Tua and the success he's had this year. If you can sum up why you think, I mean, I've read the piece and I think our thoughts are very similar, why you think he's playing so well, and then maybe whether you think that translates against this defense, which is, of course, one of the best, if not the best, in the NFL.
Well, again, like I wrote like 1,000 words for the New York Times, and then my friend Mike Kay of the Charlotte Observer, you know, goes on Twitter and says, you know, ecosystem matters. And it's like, oh, that's all I really needed to say. I could have just said ecosystem matters and gone away. Because that's what you're getting, I think, right now with the synergy between Tua Tagovailoa and Mike McDaniel and, of course, the receivers there. And the numbers are ridiculous. By the way, you talk about photo negatives. Football Outsiders just released passing by direction. So, like, now you can get, at Football Outsiders, you can get, you know, left, passing right, passing deep, passing short. Number one deep passing team in the NFL right now is Tua Tagovailoa and the Dolphins, okay? The idea that somebody who has that, let's call it C-plus arm strength, is doing that is phenomenal. And, you know, I broke the numbers down 25 ways from Sunday. Passes past the sticks. Tua is averaging like 70% completion rate on passes past the sticks. So, you know, 70% completion rate a couple of years ago would have been historic. Like, only Drew Brees could do that. Now Tua is doing that in this offense with these plays past the sticks. And, you know, I don't want to get too deeply into, like what do you call it, the film study type of things. But you're just consistently seeing teams with both safeties deep, teams not blitzing, all the numbers back this up, and you have these opportunities over the middle of the field for these receivers to move, you know, dig routes and crosses and catch the ball in the 10 to 20 yard range, and Tua can hit those passes, and the Dolphins are just making hay off of it.
But God, that's Fred Warner's music. I want to hit the Tua thing before I get to the matchup. You summed it up basically, which is both of these offenses thrive over the middle of the field. The Niners, it's a shallower depth of target with more yards after the catch. The Dolphins, yes, it's a very high depth of target. That's pretty much the, you know, and then you've got a quarterback in Tua who has complete faith in the structure of the very good offense that is built on the speed of the skill players and an ability to use his eyes in anticipatory throws to place those balls. So that's my very, you know, quick, abrupt summation of how awesome this offense is. Now, back to the Fred Warner aspect. They have not played a very good defense in a minute. They played the Bills, who were completely, you know, ravaged by injuries. Dolphins fans, it just is what it is, right? And I'm not saying that they're not a great, we're just talking about what's happened thus far. They've got a very difficult stretch ahead, but it starts here with San Francisco, a defense that it has an extraordinary four-man rush, just waves and waves of pass rushers. And I believe the best middle linebacker in football right now. Dude, Fred Warner is playing out of his gourd this year. I feel like it's almost flying under the radar for some reason, but he's playing so well. And then, you know, I would say an improved secondary. I think what I'm curious to see to me, this comes down to two things. What does D'Amico Ryans do to take away the middle of the field, which, again, just has been such an issue? But you have this incredible cover linebacker who's so freaking dynamite against play action, who's just so smart. And you have that four-man rush against an offensive line that will be missing Teron Armstead. That's a massive, massive injury in this game.
Yeah, and Armstead was hurt during the Bridgewater-Skyler games, which created that ripple effect where, like, the Dolphins suddenly couldn't do anything. And you might say, well, that's the quarterbacks, but also the protection was horrendous. Certainly the Vikings made mincemeat out of the backups for Armstead there, and that's a problem. And by the way, Fred Warner, one reason he's under the radar a little bit is because the safety, Hufanga, is like stealing all the attention because, you know, he's a younger guy, he's a newer guy, and he's making all these splash plays. The formula, you're right, because that front four is so important for the Niners. It's almost like the old, how did you stop the old Brady, classic era Brady Patriots when they had Moss and Welker and all them? And the only way to was to win with the front four. You needed seven players in coverage. You needed to, your safeties free to go and roam a little bit, and then you could do it. And that's a possibility for the 49ers because they can do that, and they should be able to exploit that. I will say with the Football Outsiders numbers, only weakness of the 49ers defense is they're 29th in the NFL against deep passes. Now, that can be misleading. Yeah, but you know, we can say that. You know why that's misleading? Because a lot of attempts that were deep passes turn into sacks or scrambles or throwaways, so they're not in that data. The ball has to be released and go deep for Football Outsiders call it a deep pass. But if they do not get home, they are still very vulnerable against those deeper passes.
And they've also, like, they don't blitz a ton, but when they do, it's kind of intermittently successful is another thing I've noticed. But I don't think they need to in this game because their defensive line versus the Dolphins' injured offensive line is a mismatch. I would say with the Dolphins, you know, their mismatch, I think, is their wide receivers against the Niners. Their improved secondary, but still, it is still a mismatch. So for me, just the question is Tua going to have time to deliver them the football? I don't know. I'm excited to watch. On the other side, Mike, this is a Dolphins defense that was really bad, but has been playing much better as of late since week. You know, so they go out, they trade for Bradley Chubb, basically to be able to get pressure for four. Since week eight, they are 10th in pressure rate when they don't blitz. They still blitz a lot. One thing that I think is meaningful in this game is, you know, this is a Dolphins defense that's really changed its identity. Used to be this like crazy cover zero man, whatever, you know, and this year they're much more, they play a lot more cover three and zone, which I think is important against San Francisco because that's a better, that matches up better with Jimmy Garoppolo in this offense.
Right, right. You can sit back on your heels against this team and you want to do that to prevent yak. And I think a little bit of that is you're playing with a lot more leads this year. So when you're playing with a lot more leads, and like for example, right. So especially if you're playing the Texans in the second half and you're up by 30 points, it's like, I don't think we're bringing the zero blitzes. But you're right. There's also sort of an identity shift there. Definitely has been an improvement when they've been able to get Chubb out there with Ingram and Phillips and some of the other guys along the way. But you talked about the difference in depth of target. I mentioned Dolphins number one in deep passing as on offense. The 49ers are number one in short passing on offense, which should come as no surprise to anyone. But it goes way down to 24th, I believe. I don't have the number in front of me. In deep passing, totally on brand for Garoppolo and the 49ers. The question is, does this create easier opportunities for the Dolphins where they can say, yeah, we can blitz a little bit more. And when we sit in our zones, we can a little bit more constricted in our zones because we don't have to worry about too many things getting past our safeties on the back end.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I should pause and note, you know, the strength on strength matchup is the other side of the football, right? So because the Niners offense, I mean, we're coming off a week where they did not look good against New Orleans. I want to mention that, you know, the defense has carried this team in the same way that the Miami offense carried their team for a while. And, you know, points have been hard to come by. And I think, like, Garoppolo he's definitely been worse than Tua this year, but he's also been up and down, you know. And I thought last week was a down. He missed a couple of throws that would have completely changed the tenor of that game. And I think as good as their defense is, like, that he has to the margin for error in this game because of the Miami offense is a lot smaller. I would say, like, there's just a lot, there's a fair amount of pressure on that unit to produce more than they have.
It feels like the 49ers have the same season every year. I really feel like, I always really come does. In a segment about the 49ers, and it's like, front four, Jimmy Garoppolo throwing short.
I know.
Yak. Kittle was hurt, but he's back. Bosa was in and out, but he's back. It's kind of the same story here. And that makes it actually hard to analyze because it's like, okay, it's another variation on this theme. They don't really have a what I call a super quality win since the Chiefs. You know, the Saints rolled over. They scored 38 on the Cardinals. If I'm remembering that game correctly, the Cardinals just kept handing the ball back to them, as the Cardinals often do, and you wind up rolling away from it there. And they had a Rams game in there, and they had a nip-and-tuck Chargers game, which was a gutsy win, but whatever. I have a hard time finding the range of this 49ers team. So if I'm making a pick, I'm going to go with the Dolphins team. That, you know, DVOA is saying this is a historic offense. This isn't just, you know, a good offense or a surprising offense. This is an offense that in DVOA is up there with the great Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, the Dan Marino 84. That's what's happening. It's a little bit disguised because of the injury games. But that's what's happening.
I was just about to ask, like, is that, do you think that's distorted by the Bills game? Because that was not the Bills. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, they're getting an opponent adjustment for that, but I don't know how extreme it is. But it's also distorted by, you know, DVOA does put, it doesn't say, oh, Tua wasn't there, that doesn't count. So 17-40 loss to the Jets, that's also in there too. So I think it balances out. The raw stats are low because of a couple weeks of Skyler and Teddy, but the rate stats are high. And when I look up and down overall, yeah, I mean, I can see the Bears and Texans in there too. I believe it. I believe it to the point that this is really, as maybe it's not Dan Marino 84, but it is really, really something special that isn't necessarily going to get nerfed even by facing a really great defense.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it just because this combination of speed at wide receiver is just not something we see. So, you know, even against, beyond this game, they have some good defenses. It's not, I don't think it's built a house of cards at all based on quality of opponent. I just kind of like, I'm like, looking at the schedule, you know, I'm like, like the best. It's interesting to me that DVOA is so high on them after playing the Texans, Browns, Bears, and Lions over the last 4 weeks. And then, you know, before then, but then before then, the big win on offense, you know, there was the Bills, and then the Ravens game is the one, but that was sort of like a Ravens defense that really had similar issues. I'm just really excited because I feel like we're just going to learn a lot about both of these teams from this game, and that's really fun. I also slightly lean Dolphins just for basically the same reason, and just because of the inconsistency, of the Niners offense thus far. And because of the improvements we've seen from that Dolphins pass rush, but I don't know. Let me wrap here. Do you think this is, so the Dolphins, you know, ahead, they have they're playing the Patriots again, and I almost want to revisit that week one game, but do you think that this is the best if you had to pick a defense to give the Dolphins offense trouble, you know, I talked a little bit about how they have, you know, Fred Warner. Do you think this is the one?
It probably is the one. I mean, a healthy Bills defense, if that would ever exist again, would be the other one. And the game planning of Belichick, I would put in there as well, that he could come up with something on the whiteboard. You can't cover Tyreek on a whiteboard, but you can generate pass rush and do some other things. Stop the run, certainly. So those would be the things. And I think for both of these teams, you know, they're penciled in playoff teams. But like where do they fit into that playoff? I think these are two teams that we put generally on the second tier, you know, below the Chiefs and Eagles and Cowboys and all. But the winner, maybe that winner is saying, hey, we put in the first tier, you know?
Totally agree. Yeah, I think whoever, especially if it's like a really convincing win, I think it again has the potential to really vault one of these teams into that sort of estimation of the public. So can't wait. All right. Let's talk about one more quick game before we take a break, and that's Titans Eagles. So I think I had earmarked this a few weeks ago when the Eagles were undefeated. I expressed some concerns about their run defense, and because I kept getting asked, but what's the game that they could lose? And I pointed to the Titans game. This is before they lost, obviously. So the Eagles run defense continues to be a concern. However, Mike, the Titans rushing attack has not been great over the last month or so. You saw that on display this last week against Cincinnati. And a lot of it is the run blocking. Over the last month, Derrick Henry is 34th in yards before contact. That's not good. Now, they have been missing, of course, their center, Ben Jones. I don't know what his status is for this game. I imagine that factors into it. But what would have been, I thought, like a pretty big concern for the Eagles, like this to me is going to be like, all right, like Titans, can you run the ball against Philadelphia? Because you should be able to.
They should be able to. What I saw a lot in that Cincinnati game last week is they're doing their thing, I formation, they're going to run, and the Bengals are just slanting hard at the line of scrimmage. And you know, DJ Reader's having a huge game, and they're bringing that force defender, they're bringing that safety off the edge, and he's getting into the backfield before they can get that play going. And the Titans are going to run in that way, and they're going to run a lot no matter what. You mentioned the center problem. They've had a left tackle problem all season long. Yep. Luan got hurt. That other fella's not doing well. I like the right tackle. I loved him as a rookie, Petit Frere, baby brother. But I don't know what he really brings to the table. So they want to constrict the formation. They want to have a tight end out there, and they want to be able to do what they do. What's interesting, running game has tailed off. The Titans are the best first down passing team in the NFL, according to DVOA. And it's exactly what you would think. Play action, there's no pass rush because everybody's sort of like focused on Henry on the play fake, and then they drop back into coverage. And that's creating some of these downfield opportunities for Treylon Burks and for Westbrook Akeen and these other guys. So Eagles have two problems. One is making sure they don't get gouged. And the other thing is to not overcompensate to the point, which the Bengals did a little of last week, where guys are just getting open deep because, you know, they got sucked in by play action.
Well, this seems like a good moment to note that they lost C.J. Gardner-Johnson to a kidney laceration, which is probably one of the top five most painful-sounding things that can happen. And, you know, that was why you said they brought in Reed Blankenship, who had the crazy interception, but then, of course, took the bad angle on that Christian Watson touchdown. But, yeah, that's I feel like you kind of nailed it to me. Like, that could be a vulnerable area for this Eagles defense. Especially if they're so worried about stopping the run because they know they're not good at stopping the run. Oh, Jordan Davis might play in this game, by the way. So that, you know, little some reinforcements coming in. If I'm Tennessee, I definitely lean into that. I would like to see more Treylon Burks. I would like to see more of I just know him as Chig, that tight end. It's a Okonkwo. I don't know. His full name is longer than that. I think he's so good. It feels like every time he's on the field, something good happens. So I feel like there's room for this passing attack to be better than they've been. On the flip side, Mike, this is another area, a reason why I was a little bit concerned about this game a few weeks ago, because Titans have one of the better run defenses. This is not what we saw last week. Green Bay, that ain't happening in this one.
Wait, you're saying that they're not going to stay in a base nickel for this entire game?
Dude, hell. I don't even get me started on the Joe Barry defense. I do an injury to keep your eye on is Denico Autry, because I thought this defense did look very different with him out, though.
Yeah, and of course, the big problem is Jeffrey Simmons. He is the big problem in the middle of that defense. And that's going to dictate a lot of the things that the Eagles do. They want to just kind of win in the middle there. Even in their sneak game where they expect every third and one, fourth and one to just sneak for it, that's going to be a problem with that guy in there. This is going to shape up to possibly be a pretty low scoring game, because I think on defense, the Titans can limit that ground game that the Eagles want to do. If I'm the Eagles, I'm basically single covering those two receivers and just saying, yeah, we don't need a deep safety in this game. Come on, we'll just send them up there to stop Derrick Henry. And then there are wild cards, like the fact that the Eagles can't tackle kick and punt returners anymore. Which is very, very strange. But yeah, the fact that Tennessee, again, is defense, the defensive front, when you have a great defensive front, and you know this, that's the equalizer. You can be, oh, well, we're weak at wide receiver and we're weak elsewhere. You can get any team to play down to you if you're getting sacks and you're also getting stuffs against the run. And that's what the Titans should be able to do a little of against the Eagles.
So if I'm Philadelphia, one thing I've kind of enjoyed about the Eagles offense is how different they are every week. You know, it's always like a different style of attack, different player who shines. I mean, shoot, we talk about the run, like Jalen Hurts. I thought Miles Sanders looked incredible. Again, competition matters, but sometimes you can look at a player and even with acknowledging the level of competition, recognize they're like doing something truly special. And I felt that way watching Miles Sanders run last week. Not just, you know, the Eagles have the best run blocking offensive line in football, the best offensive line in football. The lanes are incredible, but even with that, what he was able to do, his vision, his balance, everything, it just was fantastic. Against Tennessee, one thinks that the Eagles have the ability, as they so often do, to, you know, go to a different pitch. And they've shown Shane Steichen, their offensive coordinator, has shown a willingness to do that. And I do think this is a game where, like, this could be one of those A.J. Brown games, because I don't think there's anyone in the Tennessee secondary who can really match up with the Eagles wide receivers. Or let me rephrase that. Sorry, not that there's anyone who can't, but there's going to be a mismatch. There's going to be mismatches to be found through the air.
There's got to be opportunities, and A.J. Brown, with the exception of these fumbles that keep coming up, has been absolutely phenomenal. As a lifelong Eagles fan, I was worried when Dallas Goedert went down, because so much of what they were doing over the middle of the field was going to Goedert there. RPO game, which is pretty significant, was a lot of opportunities for Goddard, and they kind of disappeared. And then Quez Watkins comes up and comes in as a third wide receiver and picks up a lot of the slack by taking away some of those targets. And that does speak to what the offensive coordinator is able to do there. But you're right. I mean, this is potentially a big A.J. Brown game. And that's the thing about the Eagles. I think they can be balanced in this game, and they can neutralize Simmons in that front four a little bit with the read option, speed option type game as well. There's a lot of things they can hit an opponent with. Titans can't hit opponents with much on offense. It's running and play action, you know, I formation, play action, running play. That's kind of it. The Eagles can do a lot of other different things.
Yeah. I think if Autry's out in this one, and he was I believe a game time, or he was questionable last week, so that means there's a chance he'll play in this one. I just want to mention him again, because I think he is another, like, we talk about the Titans defensive line and what they've been able to do this season after losing Harold Landry, this defensive front, the fact that they've been so good at stopping the run with light boxes. They're just dudes across the, like, I mean, you know, they're just big, hulking, disruptive linemen. So I am probably going to take Philadelphia in this one, even though I think there's I just think that the because of what we just discussed, which is the versatility of the Eagles offense, but I think it could be close.
I think it could be close. It's a 5.5-point line. That would make me a little nervous. I know Eagles fans are going to be nervous. They circled Derrick Henry a couple weeks ago when Damian Pierce was running through the defense on the Thursday night game. But if I'm playing it, I lean towards the Eagles and have to consider the under at 44.5, because this could be like a slobber knocker type of game. And if you like betting over unders, this one feels like an under.
All right, let's take a quick break and talk about another game that I don't expect to be very high scoring. It's not Bengals Chiefs.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we are back, and we're talking about a game with, this probably has actually the biggest playoff ramifications of any game. 538 usually puts out like the probability swing, you know, based on certain games, and I gotta think Commanders Giants is massive because these two teams are gonna play each other twice. This is their first matchup. They are both playing for an NFC wildcard spot. They are teams that, as of late, have been trending in different directions. The Giants' Cinderella story has been, well, hurt by a lot of things, one of which is injuries. Meanwhile, the Commanders, you can call them lucky, you can call them gritty. I call them winners. So let's start there. Let's start with the Commanders' offense against the Giants' defense. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to talk about the Giants' defense without just talking about how banged up that secondary is.
Yes.
They lost their best cornerback in Adoree Jackson. That really showed on Thanksgiving, which is a shame because I have to say the Giants defense to me was one of the more, I was like, I thought they would be horrible. And they really outperformed my expectations at the beginning of the year. Dexter Lawrence still playing great. I thought Kayvon Thibodeau was awesome on Thanksgiving, but I just don't know if they have the guys at this point to keep up.
They're out of humans. I mean, they're just out of humans who can do it. By the way, I have the swings if you want the probability swings. These are
This has got to be the one.
This is the one. This is the most important game, verbatim from Aaron Schatz, most important game for the playoff odds by far. Commanders make the playoffs with a win 83% of the time, but only 39% of the time if they lose. The Giants make the playoffs 73% of the time with a win. 29% of the loss. And the big story there is that the Giants have worse playoff odds top to bottom than the Commanders right now. And part of that is the way they're trending. Part of that is the schedule lining up. I believe it's Commanders, Eagles, Commanders for the Giants over the next 3 weeks. I look at the Giants defense and I say, who's healthy? What are they doing? And at this point, it looks to me like a lot of smoke and mirrors where they scheme up everything they possibly can for the guys who are left, particularly guys in the front four. You mentioned Thibodeau. He's playing real well, Lawrence, et cetera. And then by the fourth quarter, they can't hide the problems anymore. And that's where you saw Seahawks pulled away from them, Cowboys pulled away from them. I don't think they're going to have an answer for that.
I thought the Commanders' run game was really, I mean, it was against Atlanta, which is not a good defense. But, you know, it's looked good, and I thought it looked really good. I mean, I thought Brian Robinson, he of big hat fame, ran with a tremendous fraud. He looks better now than he did, which is unsurprising, obviously, coming off of the injury. But the whole rushing attack, you know, they use Curtis Samuel a little bit. I think they use more rote motion, pre-snap motion running the ball than any team in the NFL. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors and then just like split zone runs. But unfortunately for New York, I felt this in my bones and I just checked. They are 30th in EPA versus teams that run with motion, 32nd in first down rate. They allow 6.31 yards per carry. So I don't think that bears well for them in this game.
6.3 yards per carry when there's motion in the running play?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That's including QB runs, so but still, it's a lot of runs. So this is a pretty large sample size. So it's the worst in the NFL by a pretty large mark. Yeah.
Right. And a lot of what the Commanders are trying to do, like they play a lot of hide the Heineke to a degree, where they're scripting up a lot of things and creating, you know, opportunities for very short throws with that motion and then to disguise their, I'm guessing, was a pretty simple running game besides the motion. But you're right. Robinson has been incredibly rugged. And the last three games, Eagles, we mentioned run defense, not the strength. Houston Texans, they don't have a strength. The Falcons really got worn down. They did run the ball effectively, and they've been controlling the clock effectively, especially in the last couple of weeks. The Commanders, I believe they lead the NFL in time of possession, well over 32 minutes. And we check the pace. Football Outsiders keeps track of pace. They are deliberately slowing these games down. So with when they're snapping the football, in neutral situations, not in the fourth quarter, 3 minutes left, we all know you wait until the end there. They are 30th, the third slowest, 30th overall team in the NFL. So they are very carefully saying, we're going to limit possessions. We're going to disguise how we're running the ball. We're going to run the ball a lot. We're going to make a short possession, a few possession game, and we're going to try and keep things close and beat you that way. I think the Giants kind of like that. Like the Giants are like, oh, good. This game will be over quickly, and like you're going to give us opportunities. Like in the fourth quarter, maybe you're only up by six, like you were against the Falcons. That's the Giants' theme music right there, and that's probably the best news for them in this game.
Yeah, I also thought that Falcons put some stuff on tape that we've seen the Giants do in the run, especially in the quarterback run game, that might give the Commanders some trouble. That said, I've been impressed by the Commanders' defense, Mike. Like, they were awful last year. Didn't add a ton of talent. They had talent up front. Chase Young hasn't played. I don't know what his status is, but so we all know Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, up front are very good and against both the run and the pass. But I have to say the secondary has played better than I expected, honestly. Dominique and I talked a little bit about them, and I mentioned that I thought their young safeties are all playing really well. If there's something that feels like sustainable about this team for me, it's been that improvement that they've shown on defense, because I do think they have talent on that side of the ball. Talent at wide receiver too, of course. But and that's probably why I'm going to pick them in this game at the end of the day. I guess that and the Giants' injuries on defense. Even if it doesn't make me I don't think the Commanders are a great team. I think they've shown that they can be consistent enough on defense to not have a big letdown game against another just okay team.
Yeah, they're an okay team, an average team that has a formula that works for them in the post Wentz reality. And it is this scripted offense with time shots to McLaurin, and then getting the most out of the front four. Montez Sweat also playing well this year. Yes. You mentioned the secondary. I'm a big Benjamin St. Just fan, and I think he's been playing pretty well overall. And you mentioned Chase Young. No one really knows his status. I did check quietly while you were speaking. He was stretching earlier. So that's the status update. Okay. Chase Young is stretching. If he comes in, I think it's – then I would definitely lean towards the Commanders. But overall, I think I'm still leaning that way.
I don't think I mentioned, by the way, that Arik Armstead's probably going to play. So Niners, Dolphins, a tale of two Armsteads, you could say. That's big. The fact that that defensive line has been so good with losing him and Kinlaw, just freaking insanity. Right. It's freaking insanity. Right. All right. Let's get to the other. I think this is probably the other outside of Chiefs Niners big game of the weekend. Another game I wish was on Sunday Night Football. Chiefs. Bengals. This is a true revenge game, because the Bengals not only they humiliated, they beat the Chiefs in the regular season, then they humiliate them in the playoffs. This is, and I've heard Mahomes talking about it a little bit, and you can tell he's taken this one personally, as he should, because he had a big meltdown at last time these guys played. And I think what's been very cool about Mahomes this year, and there's a lot of reasons why he's the MVP leader and this offense is so good, is that that hasn't happened. Even, he had a dumb interception last week. But for the most part, this offense, this Chiefs offense has just been consistent. And that, I think, is why I like them more this year than last year. Just because it feels like, I've said, I think Andy Reid is calling one of his best seasons as a coach, and it just feels like they're not going to panic. They have answers for different defensive looks, and that they're actually using their own personnel to dictate defenses more than they did last year.
I agree 100%. I'm not angry by the middle of the second quarter with their offense the way I really was several times in the last 2 years. Like, why the holding penalty? Why on second and two did you just launch a pass downfield when you looked like there was an 8-yard pass, and why aren't you doing all of these things? And you're seeing more consistency top to bottom from that offense. And frankly, I want Patrick Mahomes to be thinking about that playoff game a little bit. I don't want him dwelling on it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I get worried sometimes when I hear the zero memory, you turn the page, go on to tomorrow. No, you did some really dumb things. Acknowledge them, make sure you're comfortable with them, and come in a little bit prepared to not make those kind of mistakes again.
So the Bengals defense played really well last week. You alluded it a little bit with, you mentioned DJ Reader and what a superstar he was. I talked about them on the podcast on Tuesday, so I won't get into it again too much. But I think my concern is they played really well against the Titans, and I think they're built to play a team like the Titans. I am not sure they have the guys in the back to keep up with Kansas City. That's kind of, especially after losing Chido Awuzie.
Yeah, with him out, I'm just looking up and down. I saw Cam Taylor-Britt give up a big play, and he's a young player. And I don't know what Eli Apple's status is, but I know who Eli Apple is, and he's going to give you so much. So they're going to be counting a lot on their safeties to come through for them. And I don't necessarily have a lot of faith that that's a formula for success when you're playing a team that can throw so many different looks at you at wide receiver. They can throw Juju at you one time and throw MVS at you the next time. And Sky Moore getting involved and things like that. They're going to challenge your number three corner, your number four corner, your number two corner. And you can't just say, well, we'll be fine because, you know, we'll get Von Bell out there and he's going to solve the problem for us.
And if they try to play anything like they did against Tennessee, you know, like say, Kansas City comes out with those heavy looks that they've been favoring as of late, you know, with multiple tight ends in the field. They're happy to run or pass out of those looks. So I think to go back to what I was saying about dictating, I think if they like if the Bengals try to go lighter, I think I genuinely, and this is why I like the Chiefs more this year, they're genuinely happy to actually, I think they will run the football against them if they see the run. And that's very pleasant that they're willing to do that. I think the Bengals' best chance is turning this thing into another high-scoring game. And Mike, I do think that's feasible. So going to the other side of the ball, they should get Ja'Marr Chase back for this game. I thought the offense obviously held up reasonably well without Ja'Marr Chase. They are also kind of, I think in a similar way, they've also sort of matured as the season has gone on. I think you saw that really on display against Tennessee. Joe Burrow was like, all right, you know, I'm not going to get sacked this game. The ball's coming out quick. We're getting yards after the catch. And then when I start getting those matchups with T. Higgins, I'm going to take them. And then I look at this Kansas City defense, and I think it's totally possible they could do the same thing.
Yeah, they are much more flexible offense, the Bengals, than they were, say, at the start of the season or the end of last season. The idea that Joe Mixon can be out for a couple of games and Chase can be out for a couple of games and you get these step-up performances from Perrine. This young man, Irvin, who I never heard of, is making big plays down the stretch of the last game. And they're more creative and they're more committed in the running game as well, the Bengals are, I think. You know, you're seeing Zach Miller pull out. Like, yeah, we're going to pull linemen sometimes. We're going to do, you know, some trapping and things like that. It's not just going to be inside zone, outside zone. These are waste pitches between the bombs. They're doing more of that. But I've been surprised with the quality of the Chiefs defense this season. You know, obviously it's not a top 10 unit along the way. But I think they've been pretty strong at cornerback overall, and I don't think anybody really matches up totally with the Bengals when all three guys are healthy, but I think they've got the guys right now in the secondary that can potentially match up.
Yeah, I mean, I think Snead's really good. I think McDuffie, the rookie, has been really good, and getting him back was massive, especially now, you know, against teams like this. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see. So, you know, last year, they got burnt when they played man or blitzed. I mean, infamously, right, against Ja'Marr Chase. It's like it was a third and long. Steve Spagnuolo could not help himself. He couldn't help himself. I just want to be there. You know how they have, like, get-back guys for coaches? I want someone to be that for Steve Spagnuolo to stop him from blitzing Joe Burrow. Because you don't have to blitz him. Don't blitz him. You don't have to.
No.
You know, the offensive line is still not great. And if you play man or if you play single high, he will burn you. They will burn you. It's just so frustrating. So, yeah, you got to do, the Chiefs play a fair amount of cover too. I said earlier that the Bengals have been better against split safety looks. Fine. Take that. You know what I mean? Like, take that 5 yards, air yards per attempt, and they're hoping they get yards after the catch because that's when you don't do that is when they punish you. I did want to put you talked about the Bengals running the ball better. I didn't really get into this earlier in the week, but I grabbed it because I was curious. So 16% of their runs this last week against Tennessee were outside or inside zone. That's down from 50% in week one. This has been an ongoing trend with them. Yeah, I remember in the last year. Remember that game last year where they just kind of ran outside zone over and over? So the run game has evolved in to good effect, as you mentioned. And I think that they can have success running the ball against the Chiefs. I lean Kansas City, but I really liked what I've seen from the Bengals offense without Ja'Marr Chase. And getting him back, I do think that they'll be able to put up points on the Chiefs. So I feel like this is going to be a really, really fun, potentially high-scoring game.
So to be clear, you want to be the little angel on Steve Spagnuolo's shoulder him not to play. And you want to be the little angel on Andy Reid's shoulder telling him to run once in a while. I haven't seen that angel since 2003, so I don't know where that cherub has gotten to. But, yeah, Chiefs minus 1.5. If I only have to lay a point and a half for the Chiefs they've been playing lately, I think I got to take it with respect to the Bengals, with respect to how close it's going to be. That's a sweet enough line that I'm comfortable doing that. Over under 53, I don't know. It feels like it's going to be 73, but that feels like a trap on that end. I'm leaning Chiefs. I've been really impressed with what the Bengals have done over the last couple of weeks, though, because this was a team when Ja'Marr Chase went down, it was like, yeah, they don't really have a lot else to hang their hats on, and they're going to slip against some of these tougher opponents, and they have not.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's been super impressive. And by the way, Joe Burrow has been worse against the blitz this year, but I do think a lot of that is the lack of Chase over the last few weeks, because last year so many of those big plays came in those situations.
Just run a stunt and see if Lyle Collins. It feels like moving laterally this week. Don't let him go straight back and forth. Make him go side to side and see what happens.
Oh my God. Last week, I don't know if you caught the Rams Chiefs game. It's like a preseason game, you know, because the Rams were playing at left tackle, AJR Curie, did play in the Rams preseason. I was like, oh wow, and made Frank Clark look a lot better than Frank Clark is. Yeah, 1.5. I would probably go Kansas City. Let's hope they've practiced their plays versus Rush 3 this time. You gotta think this just feels like Mahomes. He is a motivated guy. Like, you know, he cares about stuff like this. I know we've done all this like X's and O's analysis. I'm gonna take it back to like the soft take, but. Yeah, I think he cares. All right, let's take a quick break. I think Mahomes cares. What a take. Let's take a quick break and come back and talk about a few more games.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Dinks and Dunks is brought to you by Dr. Pepper. It ain't college football season without the delicious taste of an ice-cold Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. As always, 5 questions, 4 from me, 1 from Lenny. Mike Tenier, are you ready?
Not at all, but let's go.
Okay. Well, you won't be ready for Lenny's question, but that's a given. First question is about Bills Pats, which we didn't talk about. It's Thursday game. I think it's a good game. With the Bills games, it's like tends to be just who's playing on defense is like a huge thing. And Von Miller will not be playing in this game. But I want to talk about Mac Jones. I want to ask you about Mac Jones. This has been obviously a very difficult season for the Patriots offense. Were you encouraged by what you saw on Thanksgiving? Do you think he has turned it around, or do you think that the Bills are going to make mincemeat of him?
I was somewhat encouraged until the fourth quarter came and there was no sustenance of it late in that game. And it felt like they were just taking advantage of that static shell that we talk about, that sort of soft coverage. And they were running more up-tempo, and the Vikings weren't necessarily ready for that. And he was playing with his instincts, and that's fine. And then instead of playing with his instincts in the fourth quarter, he's back to running, you know, JJ and Silent Matt's offense of mystery and wonder. And it kind of goes back slides to holding the ball too long, looking for receivers who aren't going to get open because they're not turning around in time because it's not a focused offense. So I'm slightly encouraged. I think Von Miller's a big absence, but I think the Bills are going to be able to handle the Patriots pretty easily.
I wonder if they get Greg Rousseau back because he's been a sneaky, also against the run too. I think that's been pretty impactful. And I think that he's week to week, so there's a good chance he plays in this one. And then Tre'Davious White was on a limited snap count last week. I got to think that's going to tick up too. So,
I mean, if they're down to AJ and Basham, that's a problem because those guys, they're okay. But then when you have to go to the bench, you know, for replacements, now you're getting a real a real downgrade.
I tweeted this out, but if you guys are listening, Kurt Warner does these great videos just about specific quarterbacks that I've really, I don't know if Mike, if you've ever watched them, but they're really good breakdowns, just kind of looking at the offense as well. And I thought he did one on Mac Jones and the Patriots offense that was really good and talked about some of their schematic issues as well as criticizing Mac Jones. I really recommend it. Go check out my Twitter. I tweeted it out. All right. Question number two. This is not about a particular game. It's a quote. You're a very good Aaron Rodgers decoder. I want to ask what you make of this quote. This is from Ryan Wood. I asked Aaron Rodgers if it would be beneficial for him not to finish out the season given his injury situation. Rodgers replied, "That's an assumption that this place won't look any different next year," Rodgers said. "So I think that's part of the conversation." What is he implying?
My God, the passive aggression could blot out the sun with a remark like that. I can't even parse it. That's an assumption. Like it's the worst freshman in the philosophy class just spoke up. Right now, in the short term, he looks at this Bears game. He looks at Trevor Siemian. He knows he can go out there, you know, injured and get a win. He knows Jordan Love could go out there and get a win and start making this conversation that he doesn't want to hear and start giving all. And
ain't no way Jordan Love was playing in this game. Ain't no way.
Ain't no way. And I think everything beyond that, the relationship between the Packers and Rodgers seems very unhealthy. It's a little. It's like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? It's like you were invited to a house, watch them argue, and watch them do weird stuff to each other, and you leave like, and it's totally cringe. So that's all I can make of that. I'm sorry, I don't have anything better for you than that.
I don't know what it means either. all right. Question number three. Speaking of toxic relationships, reported today by Mike Kliss that Russell Wilson had a birthday party. Half of the team came. My question for you is this. This is not a football question. That seems like a lot of guys to come. This is like, people were using this kind of making fun of it. Like, I think Pro Football Talk was, that means half the team didn't come. I'm like, damn, a football team is big. If 20 plus people came to my birthday party, I'd be like, okay, I'm very popular.
I'll flip that around though. Okay, so you're Russell Wilson. You live in this giant mansion. You're essentially the boss. And you are married to Ciara. Okay, now put yourself in the position of a 20-something-year-old guy. Okay, well, that's Ciara. She's inviting her friends. These are fabulous, beautiful women that you'd probably like to interact with. Okay, but that's not where you are. Okay. You're married.
You know, the food's probably amazing. The food is probably incredible at that party. It's crazy.
You put your wife and say, hey, we're invited to Russell Wilson's party. Of course we're going to Russell Wilson's party. She wants to go and meet all these other fabulous people. She wants to see these houses. She wants to eat that food. Have about a nice...
Low.
You should. Yeah, all the bathrooms. That's a good point. Yeah. So he should have like according to the analytics, like a 90% attendance rate.
Poor Russ.
Party. Poor Russ. Who want to see and be seen with these celebrities. And 50%, and Mike considered that a great win for Russell Wilson. That's just another disappointing Russell Wilson statistic for the 2022 Broncos.
Okay. Question four. We didn't talk about this game, but I actually think Jags-Lions is kind of sneaky interesting and obviously does have, you know, these are two teams that are realistically in the hunt. I'm not going to ask you who you think is going to win, but I want to talk about Trevor Lawrence, who I was really, really impressed by last week. But, you know, at times I've been up and down on, I'll be honest. And at times I was like, I feel like all my smart film guy friends are higher on him than me. And what am I missing? But last week just blew me out of the water. So right now I want to ask you, on a scale of 1 through 10, 10 being Prince That Was Promised, 1 being Josh Rosen, where is your confidence in Trevor Lawrence?
Zach Wilson's going to replace Josh Rosen at the bottom of that.
Oh, I should have said
that.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I'm like you, where it's like all the film guys are salivating, and it's like, and I'm like, yeah, he's good. You know, I'm doing that thing. So I'll put him as a passer, I would put him around an 8, but as an all-around quarterback, I'm going to still, let's say, 5.5. And the reason why is the ball security issues. Okay, you can't just say, you know, fumbling at the red zone doesn't happen. You know, sometimes throwing the interception into the end zone a little too consistently still happens. Fumbling in the red zone happens. He still does that. He fumbles at the end of that game. He gets strip sacked, and they almost don't have the opportunity for all of his magic. All of that stuff is super easily correctable and will come with time. But until it happens, I have a hard time with the he's arrived, he's this, he's that. So, you know, what's the average between 5.5 and what did I say, a 7 or 8?
So he's
6.75 overall. Let's put it there.
The highs are so high, but yeah, it's a process. But you know, it's year two, and you feel good. All right, yeah. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. Are you ready?
Yes.
Lenny wants to know if you are the oldest football writer alive right now.
I believe I am. I think I am 7.5 hours older than Peter King.
We had JP Acosta, who was at Football Outsiders. Do you know how old he is?
He's about my son's age. We would do podcasts together, and it was ridiculous. I felt like I was talking to my kid. And I knew everyone who was listening to him, you know, because you know, this is a young person's sport. But yes, I am proud to say I am the oldest living sports writer.
I love it. Well, thank you for coming on and sharing some of your wisdom with us, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. And thank Lenny as well.